welcome to the Rethink Leadership podcast with me, Jeremy Blaine. I interview leaders, experts, and business professionals from around the world who are bringing leadership principles and know-how into the digitally driven 21st century workplace, with focus firmly on the how-to rather than the what. Each episode is in aid of a charity chosen by my guests, and since 2020, we've made donations to over 80 global and local causes. Today, I welcome back Mette Johansson to the Rethink Leadership podcast. She worked in leadership roles for multinational corporations over 15 years before founding MetaMind, a training consultancy providing learning programs and the people side of the leadership skills. She's a best-selling author, and her new book, Narratives, The Stories That Hold Women Back at Work, is out now and available through bookshops everywhere. And this is the topic that we get behind. How do we move from what we need to do around diversity and inclusion in our businesses when we consider gender equity, but also other diversity lenses, to the how to get it done? That's the movement from words to action. This podcast is in aid of Keynote Women Speakers Bureau, a non-profit directory of female speakers on a mission to bring diversity to speaking stages around the world. We've made a donation as a thank you to Mette for joining us. Mette, welcome back to the Rethink Leadership podcast. Please reintroduce yourself and your business and your new book.
Thank you, Jeremy. It is wonderful to be here again. I am an author, which is, yes, why I'm here today. I'm a speaker, I'm a consultant, coach, facilitator training, a little bit the same as what you are, right, Jeremy? A little bit of everything with the main aim of transforming leadership, creating cultures that have great leadership. And I've just finished writing a book. Well, I should say I've just published a book that is called Narratives, The Stories That Hold Women Back at Work. And we've been speaking about the topic of diversity and inclusion a couple of times, Jeremy, also on this podcast of yours. It is a topic that needs to be shed light on. What I have done in this book is to make people aware of the many things that we're saying that are absolutely and utterly nonsense. We don't really step back and think about what is it that we're saying. Sometimes we just repeat things that are being said there and we don't think much about it. For instance, when we say, oh, women are too emotional to become leaders. This is one of the stories that I describe in my book. And let me immediately explain a little bit what it is about. Women are too emotional. When I say this to a lot of women, they react emotionally because we're often dismissed as leadership material because we're considered maybe too hysterical, maybe too passionate, maybe too emotional in one way or the other. And as one of the women who I interviewed said to me in a Zoom conversation, women too emotional? You should see the boys in the boardroom. When they don't get their ways, they will slam their fists on the table, they will shout, they will jump up. Women too emotional? We have, for some reason, defined being emotional as being frustrated, hysterical, whatever. And the negative emotions, such as anger, they're okay. They're not considered emotions. What happened there? And that's the irrationality that I want to stress with this book.
Well, I would like to get into that a little bit further, actually, but I'm going to come back to something that you said, that we're both kind of similar in how we approach businesses and leaders. We're having to stay as sharp as they are, really, because of the pace of change. So before I get into the book, I'd like to talk about you as a leader and as a leader that I admire. And I'd like to know what you've had to learn, unlearn, and or relearn in leadership terms to stay sharp and be at the leading edge of developing these C-suites with some of the new things and challenges that you're laying at their door.
It's something that's fairly easy, I would say, because we have the privilege that we are working with amazing minds all the time. And yes, when we're supporting others in their personal development progress, when we are supporting them in their personal development journey, their professional development journey, we also learn along the way. So there's not a day that I do my work where I'm not learning something new. For me, it comes naturally when I am helping others on their growth journey. I also learn myself. Of course, it does mean that you have to stay open to whatever conversation you have, that you might be learning something new. Be open to the notion that every single conversation can also teach you something.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. And that happens to me every day. But I think that's the beauty of the role that we play, particularly with the careers that we've had as well, is that ability to keep learning and demonstrate the importance of learning to other leaders that we're working with, who perhaps have forgotten how to do it in some ways. Well, certainly my experience. And yet on the flip side, meeting some incredible people who, and I know I sort of echo what you're saying, I sit there thinking, gosh, I know nothing, and try and pick up kind of snippets around this. So totally agree with you. And I want to get straight back into then you and how you bring this forward, because you develop them, you consult, but you are an author, and this new book is still there at the forefront of championing women lead in leadership, particularly, and breaking down that gender discrimination, perhaps, that you talked about a little bit before, at the top of our organizations. So the new book, which was Narratives, the Stories That Hold Women Back at Work, goes deeper into those sort of roadblocks and enablers. So could you kind of give us an overview of, I know you talked about some of the essences of the book before, but talk about kind of your objectives in writing it and what you want it to change as we consider greater gender equity at work and at the top.
I have noticed that there's a lot of talk. International Women's Day is upon us again, and there's a lot of talk about empowering women. The theme of this year's International Women's Day is inspire inclusion. And I'm tired of inspiring people about the topic and increasing the awareness. It's time for action. There are luckily quite some clients who are also looking at how can we make a difference right now, going from not just increasing awareness, but also how do we change behaviors? Increasingly, companies are looking at that level. Yet we have an International Women's Day that literally says, inspire inclusion. No, I want action. I want action right now. And the book is also doing just that. We are going from, with the book, I'm going from, this is what is going on, which is already eye-opening to quite a few people, to also what can be done against it. I have provided arguments. What do you say when somebody says, oh, you're way too emotional, to a woman, for instance, or as a bystander, if you witness that being said, how do you react? How do you respond? Meaning that, yes, I have a book about awareness. I have backed it up as well with research, and I have provided arguments that you can enter into a conversation to make sure that we are shattering the narratives together. So the skills and the arguments, that is also one of the things that are featured very strongly in the book. And that is what I want to achieve with the book, that we shatter the narratives, that we take a step back and think about what is this nonsense we're saying when we say, oh, well, women are not interested in a career, or women are too emotional, or women are not made for sales. We cannot hire a woman for sales. One of the most ridiculous narratives that I came across when I was still in corporate life was, oh, but if we promote her, aren't we setting a very bad precedent if she fails? What if she fails? Then no other women will ever get a chance. So how can we even talk about topics like this? The worst thing was that then also encountered a couple of other clients that had exactly the same stories. They were also wondering, could they promote women? Because if that particular woman would fail, then no other women could ever be promoted into leadership. What are we talking about? I mean, it's so obvious what's wrong with this argumentation. So why are we having these conversations?
Yeah, and You know, you're right. Just going back to something that you said, it is that movement from awareness to and acknowledgement to action. We've been talking about it long enough. And it sounds like that. Well, I know, as I know you, I know you're filling this gap from that bridging that gap from the what to the how, that we actually get to action around these things. And it sounds like, to use one of your narratives, actually one of your threads that you use, that this is not just about fixing the woman. This is about everybody across genders to be involved beyond the lip service and these kind of almost like bias conscious statements that they might make, which is, oh, well, what if this happens or what if she fails or whatever, into positive action. So who are the organizations and leaders who are leading the way for others across all genders, of course, and what are they doing differently that is making a meaningful change in organizations in terms of action from your research?
There are organizations who are very open to doing things better. And I believe this is at the core of working on a more equitable organizational culture, to be open that there are certain things that you might not know, you might not see, because everybody has a different lived experience. And it matters very much who you are, where you're born, what label you're carrying, if we might use that description of how you describe people from different diversity groups. If we are open to making a difference, to making it better, to including others, being open to the notion that we are wrong, that makes a big difference. And I have worked with organizations who've gotten into trouble. And because they got into trouble, they were forced to do things differently. That is probably the best case study I have at all in terms of companies getting it really, really wrong and then realizing, wow, we must take this seriously. The ones who are doing it right as well are, of course, the big companies that have leaders who are strongly driving the agenda. And Microsoft is a company that I believe has achieved so much over time simply because Satya Nadella has been very much pushing the agenda as well. Unilever, under Paul Polman, he was driving the organization to be inclusive, to have especially gender equality, also for very good reasons. Now, if we take the consumer goods companies, go back a couple of decades, they were trying to sell these big bottles of shampoos into some developing markets, thinking, oh yeah, that's a billion people market. And they were getting dollar signs in their eyes, not thinking that for most people in those countries, washing your hair is a luxury that you allow yourself on special occasions. And that big bottle of shampoo will cost you more than a day's salary. You're not going to spend money on shampoo. Why didn't they realize this? Because they took the managers from headquarters and sent them into the developing countries. The moment they started promoting people, women in this case, into leadership positions where they were heard of, no, that's not how you do it. Why don't you do it differently? Taking their experiences seriously, listening to them, that's when they changed. That's when they became more profitable. And that's why some of these leaders recognize it's not just the moral right thing to do. It's also a business case. There is a moral case, of course, and there's also a business case. That's when a lot of leaders started listening. And especially the leaders who are also possessing some emotional intelligence, they were able to couple the things, and they're the most successful today.
Well, that's interesting. And of course, when the numbers start talking, that's when people sit up and start realizing, don't they? So you kind of referred to some of this. So what are some of, or were some of the measurable benefits that some of these organizations who are a little bit more enlightened like this actually realized in dollar terms or kind of improvement terms?
Research was done that compared companies that had very diversified leadership and companies who did not have very diversified leadership. The top quartile of diversified leadership, they had a much higher return on innovation than the bottom quartile of companies. There was a difference, and this really deserves a drum roll. There was a difference of 9 percentage points EBIT earnings before interest and taxes. We're not talking about 9% difference between the best and the worst. No, a 9 percentage points. And if you consider that, well, a lot of companies are striving to have 10% EBIT, that's a big difference. EBIT is 9% higher in the top companies in terms of diversity scores in the leadership ranks. So yes, it's important to pay attention to, do we have the right people who are representing all different parts of society in also our company and also in leadership positions, of course?
Yeah, of course. And I know that there are leaders who are lagging behind this as well. So from your perspective and the studies that you've done, what's the continuing risks of doing little or nothing around this, or worse, just talking the talk rather than walking it and getting to action as you talk about?
The risks are that you will not be as profitable. The risks are you are losing people, especially younger generations. They definitely want to have that meaning at work. They want to be able to bring their whole selves to work, as they like to call it. They do not want to be one thing at work and one thing in their private lives. You're risking to not include a huge potential pool if you are not including all kinds of people, regardless of their backgrounds, regardless of where they were born, regardless of their ability, sexual orientation, and all those different labels that we're giving diversity groups. And that is also part of why companies who are not including diverse people are losing out. It's very simple. Now, if you have a different background to me, and of course, you and I also have very different backgrounds. If you grew up in different parts of the world, different circumstances, different studies, you have a different lived experience. And the ideas, the way you see the world will be different to my ways of seeing the world. And if we're able to bring those ideas around the table, if we can benefit from, hey, you have this idea, I have this idea, how can we build on both of it? How can we include the best and brightest ideas, further build on them with each other's insight? That is where the benefits of inclusion are. It is about building on the best ideas, regardless of who puts them forward. That is where that return on innovation will come, that will be there when you are including different perspectives from around the table.
Yes, understood. And as a summary of that, for those leaders who are doing well and can continue, but those that you've just mentioned, you know, they're doing very little and there are huge risks there of doing very little in this. What would be four or five tips that you would provide for the leaders tuning into this to help them get to that magic action and accelerate progress?
Wow, a couple of tips of what do you do in order to accelerate progress. The very first one is keep curiosity, right? Without the curiosity, you're not going to be open to the different ideas. That is definitely the very first thing to bear in mind. Now, what I like to do when I work with clients is to start with the leadership. And I typically do a leadership intervention with, because I've been based in Asia, often with the Asia Pacific leadership team, put people in a room, sometimes for half a day, sometimes for three sessions of 2 hours, to discuss different aspects of diversity and inclusion. Now, I like to get leaders in a room and create a very supportive environment, because there's a lot of things we don't know, and we're really afraid of sounding ignorant about certain things. Very good reasons, because a lot of people are being cancelled for saying the wrong thing. So you need to create that supportive environment where you can speak up about why are we doing this? What are we doing? And also surfacing some of your fears, some of the things you don't feel good about, your insecurities and your doubts. Because if the leadership team is not doing this, they will be doubtful. They might not be fully invested in the process and nothing's happening. In my experience, starting off with that leadership intervention where we get the leadership around the table for quite an intensive period of time and discuss why is it you feel uncomfortable about including people with different sexual preferences, for instance, right? That is one thing that, especially in Asia, can be a topic that's difficult to have a conversation about. Now, I don't shy away from the conversation, and I believe that we must put that on the table. We must discuss it, because if that's not discussed, you will have leaders who are not committed to the process. And one of the things that does so much damage, I've worked with companies where we've set up diversity and inclusion councils, we've set up the ERG, the grassroots groups in the companies who are supporting diversity and inclusion. And then there's one off-the-cuff remark of a leader, oh, we got to hire a woman for this, or, oh, we got to get put in here the ethnicity of the person for this. One off-the-cuff remark like that will do so much damage. It will undo a lot of the good that the rest of the company is working towards in diversity and inclusion. So yes, starting with the leadership is one of my tips, and creating that supportive environment where we can discuss, where we make sure that whatever is being said in this room, nobody is being punished or judged for whatever is said.
Yeah, that psychological safety around this for leaders, as much as everybody else in the organization, is so important. Like you say, if they're not able, or we don't give the leaders the forum to actually explore these feelings and almost like bring out their bias and start to shift that mindset, getting to action could take a lot longer. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And you asked me for many more tips than the two that I've given. One of the absolute most effective ways of getting to an inclusive culture much faster is allyship. When bystanders are not shy to speak up. So back to the psychological safety, not just in the leadership, in the entire company. If there is psychological safety around, it's okay for me to speak up if somebody is put in an unfair position, if somebody is being told something that is dismissive or hurtful, if somebody else speaks up, it's much more effective. The stereotypical situation where in a meeting room, we're asking Anne, oh, Anne, can you get us 3 coffees, please? We're asking the woman to get the coffee. Or Michelle, you're writing the minutes, aren't you? Getting the women to do that routine work that is not going to get you a promotion, but it will keep you from getting a promotion because you're too busy doing all these things and getting the image of that you are the minute writer or the coffee lady. Now, if you as a band bystander say, hang on, Michelle has written the minutes the last 5 times. How about, and then you point out to a man who does it, or, oh, Anne got coffees the last few times. Let me do it. If you say that as a man, especially from a more powerful position, that will speak volumes. For others, for allies, for bystanders to speak up on people's behalf who are maybe in a weaker position, that is one of the most powerful things you can do.
Right, and well said. And it's that thought about what we're asking, who we're asking it of, how we do things going forward, that is all part of that process up front, which we don't often spend too much time on. It sounds like from what you've just said there as well, that your new book, Narratives, the Stories That Hold Women Back at Work, is a really important how-to document to help organizations sort of move this dial a little bit. So how do they get hold of that, Meta?
It is in Amazon International. It is on Amazon in Southeast Asia, Kinokuniya. It is in different bookstores in Singapore and Malaysia. Now, right now, it is on its way to bookstores in London as well, in Germany, in Denmark. I'm right now speaking from Dubai, and I've also just heard the news that it will be featured in the Middle East in bookstores here also shortly. So yes, Amazon online is always a good way to get it. And also some of your local bookstores will definitely feature it very soon.
That is great news that it's in bookstores as well. And I'm sure those tuning in will want to get hold of you, Meta. So how do they connect?
LinkedIn, the easiest way. We're connected, Jeremy, and I'm easy to find through you and through your postings. So LinkedIn is absolutely a very efficient way to get hold of me. Or metajohansson.com. That is M-E-T-T-E johanson.com.
Well, Mette Johansson, thank you very much for joining me again. It's been a pleasure having you.
It's always a pleasure, Jeremy. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the Rethink Leadership podcast with me, Jeremy Blaine. Please like, comment, and support us on your favorite platform and subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can watch as well as listen to each episode.